Hi guys, you're listening to the Diecast. I'm Josh Veal. With me is Seamus.
Hi there.
Mumbles.
Woo!
And Chris.
Hello.
So, I don't have anything to talk about this week specifically, so why don't we just jump right into one of your topics. How about you go first, Seamus?
Awesome! Okay, this week I played Retrograde, but you know what? We kind of already talked about it last time. I'm still playing this game. The soundtrack is still awesome. And it's still a game that, like, apparently nobody cares about, and it's like a stupid dollar on Steam, but that's where a lot of my gaming time is going. And there's not much to say about the game aside from, hey, it's still fun. The other thing, do you remember, Josh, when we went to PAX, they showed off Girls Like Robots?
Yes. I do remember.
I totally forgot that game existed or was happening or was coming. I finally got it at the Steam sale.
That was like the table arrangement game,
yes,
or something like that, right?
Yeah. Right. It's like it's a logic-based game where you have to do seating arrangements for all these characters, and girls love to sit beside robots, but they hate sitting beside nerds. Nerds like sitting beside robots, but they hate sitting beside other nerds. They also like sitting on the edge or on the end of
Everybody
the arrangement.
Hates nerds, apparently.
Everybody hates. Well, robots don't hate nerds, but robots get freaked out if they're completely surrounded with all girls. So there's a bunch of these relationships like that, and it turns into a logic puzzle, and you have to put them down. You can only sit people next to people that are already there, so I can't just, like, put this person way out in the area of the game board where nobody's been placed yet, and they're given to you in a certain order. So it's a logic puzzle and a planning ahead kind of puzzle. Kind of interesting, not nearly as captivating as it seemed at PAX. Like, at PAX, I was like, wow, this sounds great. I played an hour of it so far, and it feels like I've been doing the same puzzle over and over again. Like, I'm not getting anything out of it. I'm not feeling, wow, I'm figuring out these puzzles. It's not intellectually stimulating. I'll say that. And that's a disappointment. I love the idea of the game. Oh, the other thing is it's got this ridiculous hayseed country banjo music for a background, which I totally understand that's the aesthetic that they went for, but actually
that
going for...
like it could get really annoying after a while.
Exactly. It's a cute idea, and if they did that on the menu, it would be one thing, but actually, while you're trying to play a logic game, having some kind of violins and dueling banjos thing playing furiously in the foreground while you're trying to think is actually really, really super annoying. And you could turn the music off, but it was just an odd design decision. But I wanted to follow up because I commented about that game like 2 years ago when we went to PAX. And the other big thing I did this week besides programming is I saw the Lego movie. Have any of you seen the Lego movie?
I have.
I guess I'm in a very small group then, because I have not.
I loved the Lego movie. It's the first family movie that I really had an emotional connection with in years. Like, at the end, I got a little choked up. That is how amazing it is. I just was amazed at this movie. That it got made, that it went, because it goes off the rails in the final act. Like, you don't see it, that it's going to, you think it's just going to be this normal adventure story, and then it goes completely fourth wall breaking crazy, and does something really, really unexpected, which I will absolutely not spoil. And it was amazing, and I actually got a little choked up over it. That is how amazing it was. And I don't know if that's just because I'm a parent.
No, I totally agree. I love the Lego movie too, and you're right, the ending was like, and you can kind of, you, the ending makes so much sense, because there's a lot of movies where once it does go off the rails, you're like, what are you doing? Like, this doesn't work. But it makes so much sense in the Lego movie. And
yes.
I remember when I saw it, I walked out of the theater and I was like, why don't they write Batman like that? Like, why is there a comic book out there right now that writes Batman like that? because it is so funny. And there needs to be, I think there should be comic books that are friendly for kids. Like, not all of them, obviously, but there should be some. And to portray Batman that way would, like, be awesome. And I was like, this is better than any characterization of Batman I've seen in the last, like, 2 years.
Beautiful. It was just a complete... It was almost an indictment of the Nolan Batman. Just a sort of... it mocked the Christopher Nolan Batman so hard and made it seem so stupid and childish. While also being really clever and fun. Did it in a fun way, you know, without stooping to being ugly. I just loved this particular take on Batman as sort of a condemnation of dark and gritty.
Right, and like to give everything...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, to say, like, the... Everything else always, like, is, like, Batman is legitimately cool. Like, Batman is the coolest dude ever. And this movie's like, yeah, he's the coolest dude ever, but he's also kind of a jerk. And it's one of the few movies that is willing to make fun of Batman. And I... People... Whenever people make fun of Batman, it's always gay stuff or whatever, and it's just like, I don't care, that's stupid. This is making fun of the character. And this is, like, actually smart, I'm a geek, I know shit about Batman, making fun of Batman. And, like, to me, that's so cool. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. Good job.
Yeah, just to give context, here's the kind of jokes they do. Somebody asked Batman, they were, like, building something out of Legos in the movie, and, you know, he wanted more black blocks, and somebody said, well, here, use these blue ones. And he's like, no, I only ever use black, or sometimes very, very dark gray.
Right, exactly. Like, and then there's a part where he, like, he writes, like, a song. There's a song about him that he sings.
This song! Oh my
gosh. It's on the internet. I'll find a link for it later. But there's
awesome.
A full-length version of the song that Will Arnett sang. And it is so funny and just like, oh my god, it's just perfect.
But be careful with that, because once you hear it, it will color everything. Like, the new Batman Arkham City trailer came out, and the meme was immediately when he jumps out of the car and his cape opens up, and everybody begins shouting, "Darkness! No parents!" It's like, you can't criticize Batman in isolation because he's everywhere, so this mocking of Batman kind of leaks into all the other Batman that's going on elsewhere, and now Batman kind of seems inherently comical.
Good.
Like, he doesn't realize
fucking
he's
good. Fucking good. Batman deserves it at this point. God.
It's taken altogether too long for that to happen.
Yes.
The other thing I think is amazing is this is a Warner Brothers movie. And in this movie, you've got Green Lantern and Superman. And Superman, Green Lantern wants to hang out with anybody. And nobody wants to hang around with Green Lantern. And the only reason that's a joke, like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, that would make no sense. It's like, what's wrong with Green Lantern? Green Lantern's awesome. The only reason this joke works is because the Green Lantern movie sucked so horribly bad so as to have torpedoed the entire character. So this is Warner Brothers making fun of their own absolutely inept handling of the character. And I thought that was pretty amazing. I mean, so obviously, this isn't actually Warner Brothers making fun of themselves. This is somebody snuck that in there and Warner
Pretty
Brothers
sure
let it
Warner
happen.
Brothers, the original Warner Brothers are dead, so that would be interesting.
It was the actual Warner Brothers. Yes, they still run the company from beyond the grave. But you know what I mean. It's not the execs were like, yeah, let's make fun of ourselves. This was a movie maker decided to do that and got away with it, and it was one of the best jokes in the movie, especially if you're aware of what a train wreck it was.
It's like a double joke, too, though, isn't it? Because Green Lantern is Jonah Hill and Superman is Channing Tatum. And the guys that wrote and directed this movie also did the 21 Jump Street reboot, which had Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill as the two protagonists there. So it's like this double joke.
Oh, I missed that joke.
The whole time during the movie, I was telling my kids, oh, yeah, this main character, that's the guy who's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy in a couple weeks.
I didn't realize that till way later. Yeah.
we are super pumped. I think we're going to see Guardians of the Galaxy, the whole family, on opening day. And I don't think we have ever done that as a family. Ever seen a movie on opening day. I can't even remember the last time we all went to the same movie. It's usually, you know, Heather will take the girls, or I'll take Isaac, or one of the girls, but all five of us are going to go see Guardians of the Galaxy. That's how excited we are for this thing.
It's going to be great. It's funny, because, like, as an aside, like, so in Guardians of the Galaxy, Dave Bautista's in it, and he's a wrestler, and, like, so for me to, like, see it, I have this, like, second connection to the movie, because, like, I'm like, oh, that's Bautista, he's there, hey Bautista.
Is he Dax the Destroyer?
Yeah. And it's just okay. Oh, good to see you, old buddy, doing your movie now, good for you. Like, it's just, it's so weird because no one else really knows that. And, like, Bautista came back, like, a couple months ago, and it looked like they were going to give him the belt, and everyone was pissed off because he just came back, and no one wanted him to have the belt. So people called him Bautista, like, Bautista. And then one night he wore blue shorts, so people called him Bautista. And we've been, like, trolling this poor guy for months and months, and then he finally quit. And then when he quit, we're like, aw, I kind of miss that guy. I hope he has a good movie. That's wrestling fans.
It looks good. I mean, I know it's so hard to tell from previews, but even people that, like, they released that 17-minute trailer, like, you go see some other movie and they've got 17, and people are coming out of that super pumped and say it looks great. And it doesn't look stupid. And of course it's a Marvel movie. And so I'm having a hard time imagining this thing failing.
I just want it to be fun. The thing is the Guardians of the Galaxy comics, they're unique, and they can be funny, but they're not always fun. Sometimes there's a lot of serious shit that goes down. And so I wonder if they're going to have a problem with tone in the movie, but hopefully not.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll keep it fun.
The tone of the comic books is pretty weird, and comic books have a lot more latitude with regards to tone. I mean, you've got a lot more, I don't want to say time, but you can have one issue has this tone and the next issue has another tone, where that's much harder to pull off when you've only got an hour and a half movie. It's like you can't have broad comedy and then switch it up and have super dark, and you can't switch gears as easily as you can from one issue to the next, I guess.
You know what's going to be interesting is the potential whiplash we could get if Guardians of the Galaxy is really, really, really good, and then Ant-Man comes out next year and really, really, really sucks.
Ant-Man's not coming out. It's not doing.
Ever?
It's not going to happen. It's
really
well. They're not. This is just me, like, predicting. Do you guys know anything about Ant-Man? Do you know anything about, like, Hank Pym and all that shit?
I know it's been troubled. I know it's been a troubled movie in the working, but I don't know about the hero.
Well, okay, so Ant-Man, and I don't know if they're going to do the original Ant-Man or if they're going to do the next guy who ends up being Ant-Man, but the thing about Ant-Man is Hank Pym's kind of a bad person. He doesn't think he's a bad person, but he's kind of a bad person. He, like, builds these robots he shouldn't be building. He's probably most famous known for hitting his wife. He has this complex where he's jealous of Tony Stark, and he's jealous of all of and Reed Richards, and jealous of all of these other scientists because they look like superheroes, and he's fucking Ant-Man. Like, you know, like, he's not as cool as they are. So he tries to be cool like them, and he can't really pull it off. So he's a really complicated character, and I think that that's what's fucking up the movie, because these directors go into it and they're like, yeah, oh, I just realized I'm not making a hero movie. I'm making a hero or a movie about a crazy scientist with a complex. And it's like, it's almost a supervillain. And I think that's why I don't think the movie's ever going to get made. And I think that's why they're having Tony Stark now be the guy who builds these killer robots, so in the Avengers movie. So, like, I don't think it's gonna happen.
I don't know. They were in, like, production, so that's a lot of millions to have spent at that point. Like, entire companies are signed. I think, if nothing else, if it happens, it's going to happen by way of contractual obligation.
Very true, yeah. But I don't think it's going to be... Yeah, it'll be awful. I mean, I don't think anyone's expecting it to be good. I don't think even Marvel Studios expects it to be good, because it's just... It's fucking Hank Pym, goddamn.
Not if you go with, like, a totally new backstory with a new character and have it be, like, John Antman, and then he gets bit by a radioactive ant and becomes an ant guy.
Although, you know, it almost feels like we're due for a bad Marvel movie. Like, it just, they can't keep making awesome movies forever. We have to have a bad one sooner or later. And I guess I would rather it happen to a hero I don't know anything about than have one of the main heroes be terrible.
Well, it's sad for me because I think it would be cool to make a movie about a guy who's not that good at being a superhero. And if it was done correctly, it'd be one of the best superhero movies, in my opinion, because it's this guy who wants to be a cool dude and he just isn't. And I think, like, that's really interesting. But I don't know if these superhero studios can handle something that deep, like something that,
yeah,
that complex, you know what I mean?
I don't think they can, just because look at what happened to Tony Stark, and some degree of whitewashing of Tony Stark was bound to happen no matter what, just because he's kind of the anchor point for the entire first gen of the Avengers, so they didn't want to have him be like this raging alcoholic with daddy issues, but they tried to deal with the daddy issues in Iron Man 2, and it did not work at all.
Exactly.
And part of that's the script, but they don't deal with the alcoholism. They just sort of, like, mention it in passing. Like, he gets drunk in one scene, and that's his alcoholism. He deals with daddy issues for half of the worst of the Iron Man movies, and then that's his daddy issues, and he's done with that now. It's not, you know, the guilt of his dad's war chests hanging over his head for all his whole life and leading to a drinking problem and an ego problem, and that's why he has to compensate with Iron Man. We don't go into any of that. We just sort of have it be like, oh, it's Robert Downey Jr. Beating people up in a CGI suit. And if that is what you're trying to boil Ant-Man down to... If you remove all of the interesting character flaws from Pym, there's not a lot of fun-time superhero stuff I think you can do with him, really. I mean, Mumbles, do you disagree? Do you think there's something you could do with him? Like, as just a generic action man? So, yeah.
Man, you guys make me wish that I paid more attention to superhero movies.
It's a good time to be into superhero movies, man. It is a glorious time to be into superhero
I guess.
Movies.
Maybe not so much if you're into DC, but maybe... Superman vs. Batman will be good.
Superman v. Batman. It's a court case.
What did you just say?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no, no. It's not going to... It's going to be fucking
the worst. It's uncharacteristic for me, but let's try to remain optimistic.
Your optimism sickens me.
Well, let's move on to someone else's topic now that Seamus' topic has ballooned into... I don't even know what we were talking about.
What was that? What happened?
Lego movie, then other movies.
Yeah, and then, yeah. Mumbles, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been playing Divinity Original Sin, and that's
How
fun.
Is that?
You got to it before I did.
It's super hard, but it's rewarding, and... It's basically like an old RPG with, like, D&D diecast system, and you wait your turn to do combat and all that shit. And
diecast
you play
system, you say.
Diecast system, right. So you play as two protagonists. I've never played a role-playing game where you role-play two people. So you role-play, you make up decisions for both of these people. So, like, you could have your girl be, you know, like, kind of a pirate, does anything to get by, cheats, steals, lies, all that shit. And then you could have your dude be like, I am a paladin, I would never do that kind of thing. And so they have arguments over stuff, and it's kind of neat. The most interesting thing about the game to me is you organically solve problems a lot of the time, where, as in, like, Dragon Age... Whenever there's a problem, they're usually like, oh, click on this thing and solve the problem. Oh, here's a dialogue wheel. Pick the right one, pick the right color so that you can get the enough points to blah, blah, blah.
That's almost the heart of my problem with BioWare's dialogue, is that it never feels like two people talking.
Yeah. In this game, it really does feel like you're engaging in conversation. So anyway, like, to give you an example of how the game lets you decide how to, or lets you figure shit out, I came out of this dungeon, and by chance, I had looted a rain scroll out of one of the vases. So I'm leaving the dungeon, and I see this ship on fire. And the game isn't like, all right, now open up your inventory, click on your rain scroll, and cast it to save the ship. It's just like, this ship's on fire, what are you going to do about it? You're like, you could either just keep walking and be like, I can't help with that. I don't know how to save a burning ship. Or you could be like, oh, I have a rain scroll. I wonder if that would work. And then so you click on it, and it does work. It saves the ship. All the pirates are like, yeah, thank you, awesome. And then you're like, oh, shit, I just solved something because I thought maybe it would work. Awesome. And there's a lot of stuff like that. And that's what is the most interesting thing about the game to me, is just, I think I can do this thing. I want to try to do this thing. Oh, shit, it did something. Awesome. So, it's pretty fun, but it's super hard.
Isn't their slogan something like how they are the closest thing to pen and paper RPGs on a computer? Something like that? I don't remember the exact slogan, but...
Yeah, I mean, I wish Redscar was here so he could tell me if it is or isn't. Because I've never been able to join a D&D group. There's not really any around here that I can find. So this is as close as I can get to it, I think.
I've heard it compared favorably to the Baldur's Gate games.
Yes.
Like, it's been called, totally, like, a modern Baldur's Gate. Which sounds pretty cool to me. I've been meaning to play it. I got it the day before it came out officially, when it was on early access. And I was like, oh, it's going to get released tomorrow. Okay. But right around that same time, I'd started an XCOM playthrough. And I was like, well, I don't want to do two turn-based games at once.
I mean... From everything I've heard about it, having not actually played it, it sounds Baldur's Gate-y in the good and bad ways. Like, there's tons of options, tons of different ways to solve problems, like Mumbles was saying, but it's also got the most, like, crazy arcane interface, and it doesn't explain anything to you, and it is just, like, really, not difficult in a, oh, this game is hard, but difficult in a, I literally don't know how to use the interface to do that kind of way. And that's, I don't know.
Yeah, I would never...
Sorry, go ahead.
I'll go. Okay, I was just going to say I would never recommend it to someone who hasn't been playing RPG games for at least a couple years. Like, and the combat itself is difficult because if you cast a fireball, it's not like Dragon Age. You're going to get hit by your own fucking fireball. Like,
actually,
you need a...
Dragon Age 1 did that.
Not Dragon Age 2. Did it?
Yeah, it bugged me about Dragon Age 2 that it did not do that. Because
Dragon Age 2 didn't fucking do that.
Chucking fireballs at Alistair and going, hey,
yeah,
have fun!
Exactly. Well, and I mean, that's the direction
played it
that
on easy,
role-playing
so.
Games... That's the way that role-playing games are going now, where you could cast Firestorm and, like, none of your characters get hurt, because it's easier that way, you know? And you don't have to be like, oh, I need to make sure my... knights out of the way or he's gonna get burned to death. But yeah, so that kind of shit's hard.
Yeah, Jarenth and Dez have been doing a co-op playthrough, and apparently at one point Dez sold an important quest item to a vendor and they didn't realize it for like 3 hours.
Oh no.
Are you serious? Like, that's the level of lack of handholding?
Yes,
where,
yes,
like,
apparently that is what happened.
God, I there are parts of that era of game design that I don't miss, and crap like that is maybe part of it, where you can screw yourself by selling a important quest item to a vendor, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if it's like Morrowind style, like you can actually render the game incompletable by screwing up so bad.
Well, but at least Morrowind would, like, tell you, hey, you killed a critical guy, time to start over. It looks pretty. I will say that I've just started dipping my toe into the RPG or the RTS game based on that universe that came out way before, like 2 years ago, a year ago, whatever.
Dragon Commander?
Yeah. That is a...
I got that.
Dragon Commander is a very different game.
Yeah, I'd heard of the Divinity series, and I almost didn't believe that Dragon Commander was the same franchise.
Dragon Commander, for those who aren't aware, it is basically a real-time strategy game where you are a dragon and can fire things. Yeah.
You're not just like a normal dragon, you're a dragon that has a jetpack.
It's kind of cartoony and cute. It's more cutesy and colorful than Origin, I think, or whatever.
Like a Total War-style game. You've got like the overworld where you like progress turn-based and try to take over the world, and then you've got the various RTS battles that you do, and while you're in the RTS mode, at some point you can decide to just fly around as a dragon and kill stuff. Of course, I wasn't a huge fan of that because I would just default to wanting to fly around the world as a dragon and killing stuff, and that you can't do that. You can't just totally ignore the RTS component.
Yeah, there are certain things you have to keep alive, and also there's a cooldown on it, and you have to wait a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of restrictions on being an awesome dragon raining hellfire down. But it's just weird to think that this is the same universe, because that game literally starts with you being half dragon to a random kingdom and deciding that you're going to steal their Protoss-style megaship and then reclaim the kingdom from your siblings. And then Divinity, the original, the new one, is just this Baldur's Gate, much more serious, much more realistic. I don't want to say realistic, it's high fantasy, but it's not steampunk and talking half-dragons with jetpacks crazy, you know? Or at least not from what I've seen.
Are there any, like, significant steampunk elements that you've run into, Mumbles?
No, but there is stuff in the later game. Like, there's zombies and mech suits and shit like
that. Oh, that is the, it is the weirdest franchise.
I wouldn't put it past them. This is the studio that named their first game Divine Divinity, so... I mean, it's always been a weird franchise.
It is weird, but I like it. I like a little weird.
No, it's fun. Even the Dragon Commander game is a quirky weird, not a this is dumb weird. It's endearingly weird.
Yeah,
totally.
What about you, Campster? What have you been playing?
Oh God, stuff. I sat down with Josh last weekend and played a little bit of Payday 2. That happened.
Yes, there was that. Neat.
It's Payday.
Yeah, it's Payday. Like, Payday was like Left 4 Dead, except you're bank robbers instead of fighting zombies. And Payday 2 is like Payday 1, except you have a whole bunch, like a lot of unlockable equipment and stuff, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
See, I like that. I like multiplayer games that have that incentive to keep coming back, where, you know, there's more to it than that. And there are crappy ways to do unlocks, where if you get more powerful crap and prestige crap and stuff like that, I don't like that, but this is one of those games where it doesn't really matter what gun you're using, because it's all just gunning down, you know, swarms of what are essentially zombies anyway. So unlocking guns doesn't give you, like, a competitive advantage, really. And aside from eventually getting a silencer, which actually is almost critical, which is part of the problem, is that the stealth in this game is absolutely busted, and I kind of hate it.
And
I'm sure I'll get flack from Payday fans for that, but this is a game that ostensibly supports being able to rob a bank without having the cops called. It is... like, high-level players only can do that. It is really hard to intuitively rob a bank without setting off all the alarms or having to kill civilians, etc. It's really difficult. Also, the game is a lot of waiting. Like, a lot of waiting.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like, defend the drill while it occasionally breaks and has this timer to wait until you can do whatever it is that you're doing next, go into the vault and steal stuff or whatever.
And then there's the escape missions, which are like, oh, you escaped with the money, but then your car crashed. Wait for a second escape vehicle, and then you're literally just defending yourself. The whole game is basically
in a city intersection, and have the cops come from every direction and wait for your second escape vehicle to show up somehow.
Because we hired a backup escape guy just in case. No, but it is frustrating because it's like those sections in Left 4 Dead where you, like, have to trigger a door and the horde comes running. It's like that if that little bit was what you turned into a game. So, like, Left 4 Dead, you're, like, walking around an environment and you're making progress and you're going from A to B. This is, like, just take those little areas of horde attacks and turn that into a game. And that's all the game is, basically, in a very, very fundamental sense. And, like, the skilled players can circumvent activating the alarms and get out of there with money without really alerting the cops, but that requires basically rote memorization of the entire level to a degree that is just ridiculous, and I don't know, I don't care for it.
And I kind of felt like the first game was more dynamic in its level design, and I suspect this is because we're not at the level where we can actually take on the more interesting missions, which is part of my problem with it, is that like everything is kind of a grind in Payday 2. But like in the first game, like you would go and rob a bank, and you would first take hostages so that you could like trade for people who've been captured, and you had like an optional task to like, oh, go and get rid of the security footage, and you had several different options for getting into the vault, and then the vault was like really big and had plenty of choke points. And then you had to get all the money and get out of there. And in this game, it's like, oh, okay, you go into the bank and you open the vault and you take the money and then you leave. And there's it's pretty much you go into the bank, you put the drill there, you wait for the drill to finish, you get the money, and then you run away.
Also, I'm not normally the kind of guy to complain about video game logic. Really, I'm not. I don't mind video game logic. But there is something that is just immediately wrong to me about the fact that, like, if there are four different safes in the level, one guy can walk up to every one of these four safes and pull out this giant industrial drill and activate four giant industrial drills at once. But zip ties, you can carry two, and you need to unlock the ability to carry more than two zip ties. Like, at that point, come on.
Yeah.
If only you could tie up hostages using industrial drills.
I don't... That sounds like a recipe for disaster. You just place it on top of them while they're on the ground and they can't get up. I've also finished up Valiant Hearts lately, so that was cool. I like that. Nobody here has played it, I take it.
I intend to get it here at some point, but I've been busy.
I'm probably going to do a thing on it, so I don't want to talk about it too much, but I mostly enjoyed it. It is a kind of adventure game-y thing. It's kind of like what The Cave wanted to be, but The Cave never managed to pull off at all.
Oh, The Cave.
Yeah,
The Cave. What's The gameplay actually like? Because, I mean, we've all obviously seen that trailer, but I've never got a sense of exactly what you would be doing in him.
It actually has a pretty big grab bag of mechanics. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but some of it works and some of it doesn't. Some of it is some really, really light 2D stealth. Some of it is very, very basic puzzle-solving, item collection, adventure gamey stuff. Like, you're in a camp, and then you see, you know, one guy needs a crutch, and another guy has a stick that looks like a crutch, but he needs a thing, and you need to go get the stuff. And it's never obnoxious, and it's not the sort of game where you just get utterly stuck and just beat your head against the wall. It's all pretty straightforward, but and then there's a few other mini games. There's a driving car mini game. There's a tank mini game. There's a medicine mini game. There's lots of little tiny mini games as you do stuff in the game world, and it tries to mix it up pretty frequently. It is, one thing I will say is it's absolutely gorgeous. I love the way this game looks for a. Given the history of video games and how gray and grimdark and gunmetal gray and ugly and brown they've been lately, and given that World War I is sort of renowned for being both actually grimdark gray and brown at the time, and only remembered in sepia tone photos that themselves are now brown, they managed to make this really vibrant and beautiful world, and it is just surprisingly gorgeous. So I really like... I like the stuff that Ubisoft is doing with their stupid little stupid, but you know, I don't like Ubisoft. But I really like what they're doing with that little art house logo. This is the same same logo that released, or same label they used to release Child of Light, which was another game that was really, really, really pretty and played pretty well and had terrible writing from Far Cry 3's writer, Jeffrey Ohalem, and I just cannot stand the rhyming in that game.
Turns out that guy's not very good at writing games.
Turns out.
FYI.
No, but they're really nice, little, gorgeous, interesting to play games, and I'm not sure what to think about them still, kind of, because none of them have been great yet. I'm waiting for one of these small games that really just knocks my socks off and shows, like, look, here is a game that will sell a million, everyone is super in love with it, it's beautiful. I'm waiting for basically what, you know, what that game company did with Journey or something, that level of everyone sort of who plays it falls in love with it. And all of these games, or at least the two that I've played so far, both Child of Light and this game, both have moments where it's so close to that. And then it's so also obviously a game by a major publisher where it's like double as long as it really needs to be because we need to meet gamer expectations for a market price, and we need to, you know, include certain levels with action sequences because why wouldn't you include action sequences?
And, it's no Transistor.
No, it's very much just... It's a game that has artistic ambitions, and it nails whatever it attempts, but then half the time it's also going off and doing, you know, video gamey stuff, and you get whipped back and forth, I think, between those two extremes. Like, I guess the problem is, there are scenes where you have to play a mini game for healing, and it's one thing when you're playing a mini game to heal a guy that's like dude bro, Joe Soldier, and another thing where it's one of the characters you care about, and suddenly now it matters, and then other times it doesn't matter at all. And then there are times where it's like, oh, we need to do this and this, and that matters because it makes sense for the character, and oh, wow, this is awesome and artsy. And then there are other times where it's like, the general said I need to get dressed for the army, and I need a helmet and a backpack. Where do you keep the helmets and the backpacks? Why aren't you giving me a helmet and a backpack? Why do I have to go solve a puzzle with a flag to get the helmet so I can get the backpack? And But on the whole, I liked it. I mean, if you want something that's kind of very pretty to look at, very engaging, weird tonally, but aside from that, I liked it. I don't know. I feel like I've talked for too much, so anyone else?
I think you've actually had the shortest segment so far.
You guys, talk with me. Engage with the words that I'm saying. I've been playing Dead Rising 3, which is kind of like Typing of the Dead.
Oh?
What?
That's a weird thing
to say. Dead Rising 3 is a typing
simulator?
No, it's both Dead Rising and House of the Dead started as these sort of like B-movie zombie rip-off things that had like a real sense of awareness and humor about themselves and carried that forward up until their most recent incarnations, where the next place to take that was apparently Grindhouse. And Grindhouse does not lend itself to campy fun B-horror, not in the way that they're actually doing it. You know, in the sense that both Typing of the Dead and Dead Rising 3 take the gritty, mean-spirited, exploitative, borderline racist elements of a lot of that stuff, and don't really do anything with it other than just spit it back at you. And, I don't know, I'm not really digging that. Like, I like the way the game plays. It's still Dead Rising through and through, where it's, like, wacky, combining the element, or combining things to make weapons, and, you know, you can take duct tape, strap machine guns to a teddy bear, and have the teddy bear act as a turret and mow down zombies, which, haha, it's funny. But, like, I don't know. The first bad guy in the game is an Asian dude with a Fu Manchu who knows karate, because of course he does, and you fight him in Chinatown, and he talks about how his children have dishonored him, and that's why he went crazy, and that's like guy number one in a long list of, like, you know, making fun of people in a really negative, bad way, where, like, I don't get the sense that Dead Rising used to do that. You know, Dead Rising well, go ahead, Josh.
Which is more... Oh, go ahead.
My problem with Dead Rising had always been it's a game that is designed around New Game Plus. Like, you're supposed to play through the game in its entirety and then play through it again to get all the good stuff.
Well, I mean, not to tempt fate here, but you could say the same thing about Dark Souls. Oh!
I don't know about that. I mean, especially not Dark Souls 1.
Curse you, Christopher.
But
Anyway,
I got the feeling that Dead Rising was like even more so in direction. Like there's item chains you can't even get
the first one
until
for
you've
sure.
done the game all at once.
The first one is definitely go ahead, Mumbles.
Oh, because I remember playing the first Dead Rising, and it'd be like, oh, I would see stuff online about all the cool, crazy shit that you could do, and the game just sort of was like, all right, yeah, you can do that stuff your next playthrough, huh? Your next playthrough? Right? And you're like, but I want to do it now.
I don't know. I've always been partial to Dead Rising, just because I really like the tone of the first one. And this one doesn't have that, but it has all the fun game mechanics that I really like anyway. I'm like the only person that really likes how Dead Rising plays. But they have moved away, especially since they're now using Capcom Vancouver, who used to be Blue Castle, who are a Canadian development house. They've moved away from the very punishing New Game Plus approach to things. At least unless you really screw up. You'd have to be really, really bad and get yourself into a pretty terrible position to not be able to make progress in Dead Rising 3. Whereas in Dead Rising 1, especially, it would be very easy to reach a point where, like, you need to save at least 3 more people, there are 4 people out there, you have time to grab 2 of them, that's it, game over, time to start over. So, I don't know. But I like it. I like playing it. I just don't like what it did to the tone. But I am hopeful for Dead Island 2, ironically, because I hear that's being developed by Jaeger.
Really?
I from what I understand, and I'll Google this in a second to make sure, but I'd heard that it was being developed by Jaeger, who are the guys that did Spec Ops. And if the guys that did Spec Ops are making Dead Island 2, they have my attention. I would be curious to see
Dead
what they
Island, the trailer, the game?
No, the new Dead Island.
Yeah, I know.
I'm on board with this idea.
The game.
No, but the idea, I mean, I think almost half the problems were with Dead Island were exactly that they had no idea what they wanted to do tone-wise. Is this supposed to be gritty? Is this supposed to be funny?
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be fun? It had no idea.
I think it was less that the developers didn't know what they wanted. I think they knew what they wanted, and they wanted something that was really stupid. But then the marketing guys decided, hey, let's take this and like make something interesting out of it.
That confusion carried into the game. It wasn't like they just made the trailer was just the tip of the tonally dissonant iceberg. Once you get into the game, you run into a guy and he's weeping because he had to beat his brother to death. And then you go next door and there's a woman who wants you to round up champagne because she's still partying. And then you go next door and there's somebody's like, oh, we're dying of thirst. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. The lady next door doesn't seem to need any water. In fact, she will pound down an unlimited amount of champagne. Why don't you use her water? It's like, what is this?
Maybe these guys drank too much champagne.
It's just some parts of it are really silly, goofy, and here I'm doing a crazy Russian accent and I'm a wacky character, and then somebody else is having this gut-wrenching moment, and then somebody else is like worried about their family. It's all over the place. It doesn't know if it wants to be like a Shaun of the Dead with no jokes or a like Night of the Living Dead with no scares.
That is
neither
the
of
best...
those sound good.
I was going to say, that's the best description of Dead Island I've ever heard, actually.
It's such a weird thing to become this big franchise. I mean, they've got like a fucking MOBA now, and they're doing sequels, and like, what? Did it really sell that well?
Force of Will?
Of course, Watch Dogs sold like 8 million copies, so...
I guess I'm part of that problem. I think we all are.
Thanks, Seamus.
I don't actually have Watch Dogs, so...
Well, now I gotta buy it for you so you could be part of the problem.
God damn it. Wait, that would just make you more part of the problem.
No. When you give it to somebody else, they become guilty.
I don't think that's
how it
works.
Yeah, that's how it works, because I think actually my copy was a gift.
If you're robbing a bank... And you don't want to be caught.
Campster bought it for you, actually.
Yeah, I didn't want to indict him.
Campster, you asshole!
I needed someone to complain about the game to, okay? And he was available.
And it worked. It worked. Now we had our misery together as friends. We Thelma and Louise'd our way over that particular cliff.
Aww.
Holding hands all the way. It was beautiful.
My point is that the Dead Island trailer, the Dead Island 2 trailer was way more upbeat and seemingly honest about the tone that the game is probably going for than, and I'm hoping that's the case.
Yes.
Now, maybe the game's going to be all grimdark and evil in contrast to the sort of goofy trailer, but if the game itself is that sort of, like, fun and aware of how dumb a zombie apocalypse is, and you really get that sense of, like, goofiness to it, I really, really would welcome that, and I would love to see what Jaeger could do to sort of subvert the entire sort of zombie game trope, especially since they've got a history of... Go ahead, Mumbles.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I'm kind of just completely sick and of fucking zombie games. Like, I just... Even ones that are self-aware like that, even especially ones that are self-aware, I just don't give a shit anymore. Like, okay, zombie apocalypse.
With you.
Alright, we're good.
They become the new World War II shooters. Although the modern shooters have also become the new World War II shooters, so we're in a weird situation where no one likes anything that's coming out.
That's an accurate description of video gamers right now.
I also picked up the Capcom Super Ultra EX Alpha Hyper Mode DLC for Dead Rising 3.
That was the silliest fucking trailer!
I thought, so this is what you, kids, this is why you do research before you buy DLC. I thought I was buying, like, a bunch of wacky fun Capcom goodies for my Dead Island, or Dead Rising game. Like, suddenly I'll be able to pick up, you know, Mega Man's blaster, or, you know, where's Zangief's outfit, and then be Frank West running around in Dead Island, or, I keep calling it Dead Island, Dead Rising 3. It is not that. It is a multiplayer, high-score-based thing where you, like, play one of the characters dressed up as a Capcom villain or Capcom hero and go, like, try to complete objectives for a high score. It is a high-score arcade game set in...
It's also where, literally everything in the game is a reference to some old Capcom arcade machine.
Yes. And... That is not what I wanted, because I don't have any friends that play this game. So I now have a multiplayer high-score-based thing for online play that I have to play alone and then just get frustrated and quit. So it was kind of a waste of $10. So don't ever buy things on the internet because of nostalgia is, I guess, my lesson.
Don't buy anything on the internet without reading the description first.
I really should take that advice, too. I bought a few things on Steam without reading the fine print of what I was getting.
Such as?
Okay, here's how bad it is. I don't even remember what it was. It was like Steam sale. Steam sale.
Sitting
oh,
in
that's
your Steam library and you'll find
I'll
it
never...
in 3 years and go like, when did I get this?
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, I mentioned this in previous weeks. I spent way more at the Steam sale than I ever meant to. And all of it seemed plausible at the time, but after the carnage was over, I realized I think about half of this is never getting looked at.
Speaking of never being able to find games in your Steam library, I sat down at some point this week as an experiment to try and see if I would like it, and sorted my entire Steam library into categories. I don't know if I like it, honestly.
I did that once, and then, you know, something happened. Steam crashed once, and when I restored it, or maybe I moved to a new computer, and all of that was gone. And that takes a long time. The interface is not good. It's not drag and drop for that. So I never did it again. What I would love...
Steam skins, actually, this last week.
Ooh, I've always wanted a different skin. I get tired of the black. But what I've always wanted is a way to sort games by order bought. This is something that we need. I cannot believe we don't have it. You could sort it by all kinds of things, but I want, hey, what did I buy recently? Put that stuff at the top so I can sort through it.
Instead
like
of having
you buy
to search
bundles.
Steam in your Gmail box.
Yes, it's so stupid.
Yeah, I literally do end up doing that a lot, especially during Steam sales, where it's like, now, did I get those three games? What were those three games? Because I know I bought three. Okay, it was that, that, and that. Got it, yeah. And I have to go to Gmail for that, which is the weirdest thing in the world, that you have to check your email to find out what Steam should already know.
Yes. And that's a sensible way to sort things. Like, they have recent, which is a good system for sorting things. It's, you know, the stuff you've been playing will be at the top of the list. But how about the stuff I just bought? And I don't want to hunt down through it. Wait a minute, was that the shoot guy, or was that shoot guy, or was that gold shoot guy? I don't remember. Where, alphabetically, where would this thing be? Oh, I'll use the search. And
super
then,
shoot guy.
Super EX shoot guy, yeah, alpha. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you end up having to use the search when really, if you could just sort by date purchased, that is probably the most useful possible sort for you, and it's the one it doesn't offer, and it really bothers me.
And just so no one thinks that I'm buying like a million games and can't keep track of what I'm purchasing, what usually ends up happening is during those Steam sales, I go and I, especially for my show, go and look for like artsy little indie games, and I find four or five of them that look really cool, but I don't commit the names to memory. I'm like, oh, that could be really neat, add, that could be really neat, add, and I only end up spending $5, but then I come back a day later after work and I'm like, okay, what were those five games?
Yes. Yeah.
That's exactly how it works. And it really, when you see a game for $3, it's like, well, is there any point where I might conceivably want to do a video or a blog post on this? If yes, then get it now while it's cheap. I mean, will this ever be useful as footage or as screenshots? So
that drives so much of my trip purchases.
I know it does, because you don't want to be caught like, oh, I'm in the middle of writing about something and I don't have what I need. And then you've got that, well, do I go to YouTube and snag somebody else's screenshots? No, that sometimes pisses people off. I could search for screenshots. Oh no, everybody puts watermarks on them, and I should get my own screenshots anyway, but oh, I don't own the game, and it was $5 a few months ago, and now it's $20. Damn it.
I still don't understand that. Like, getting angry at someone else using your video. Like, if someone used the video clips I captured in another video, I don't care, because I don't own those clips. I don't own that game. I'm using them under fair use because I'm criticizing the game or games in question, but I don't lay claim to ownership of that footage.
Credit? Like, you don't care if they credit you or not?
No, I mean, I got my use out of that footage. Like, sure, credit me, but I don't need it.
Yeah.
It gets all a little weird, though, when you're talking about people who are using them ostensibly for fair use, but also monetizing their channels and doing like,
it does get a little scummy.
I mean, I monetize my channel. I'm already getting my cut from the footage. I don't know.
Yeah.
I put a lot of...
Other people might not be so open-minded about it, though.
I don't know. It's just weird, because it's not really your footage to lay claim to, right? Like, technically, if you take footage from a game, it's the people that own the game that really own that footage.
Alright.
I like to think nobody owns the footage, that it's like, if I just go... I mean, if it's a video game, then it's kind of like I run out in the street and just start shooting random shots of traffic. Nobody owns that. Nobody can say, nobody else is allowed to take pictures of this road. I like the idea of it just all being public so we don't fight about it.
At some point, there will be a legal battle that will finally decide exactly what the hell all this stuff is. And then we will finally be able to say with authority what's going on.
I don't want to have to get permission from...
I don't think there's going to be just one, though.
Yeah, I don't want to have to get permission from McDonald's to take a picture of a McDonald's. I don't want to have to get a picture from get permission from the government to take pictures of the courthouse. And I don't want to have to get permission from, you know, Activision to use footage of one of their games. That's just makes me really
uncomfortable.
Well, but
that's the other thing. Like...
buy the courthouse or the McDonald's, though, is the argument they could make.
I know.
But isn't that the double think that kind of is wrong with a lot of that gaming mentality, where, like, the people who originally posted their video online and then had their footage taken and used somewhere else, they felt perfectly comfortable taking the game footage without permission and insisting that that's their creative right, but then someone taking the footage they captured from a game they didn't even make is somehow infringing on their ability to own footage?
I think the big difference is that people put a lot of, like, time and effort into making the videos, and all they want is credit. That's really all they care about, is, like, why can't you just throw me a bone and put where you got the footage so people will go look at my videos? And I think that that's fair. I think that's, like, if I took... when I did my own two, like, analytical videos, I couldn't fucking screen capture any games. So I would take it from other people, but I would credit as many people as I could for it, or everyone. Because it's like, I think it's courteous. I think it's like, you made this video, I'm taking some of it, I'll put it in here for you. And that's what, I mean, that's what news companies do. If you see a PBS special on World War II, at the end of the movie, or the documentary, they'll be like, this is where we got all of our sources. It's just, I don't know, I think it's professional, it's just the right thing.
I can agree with that. My worry, like, the reason I try and just get all my own screenshots and all my own footage is you always worry, like, oh, I don't want to have to play an hour and a half of this game to get this footage. And here's somebody on YouTube, I could capture it, it would look exactly the same. You know, it's of a cutscene, and all I need is a few screenshots of it or whatever. But if I do that, but the right thing to do is to give them credit. But if I give them credit and they're a dick about it and they're like, you didn't get my permission first, take your stuff down. And then you end up with internet drama. And so it's actually safer to not give credit, and then nobody knows where the footage is from. And so it's that, you know, I end up in that point. It's like, well, is this person going to be crazy and come after me? Or should I give them credit? You know what? I'll just go get my own damn footage, and that's safest. If there was, it's like we need a set of established rules, because some people think it works one way and some people think it works another. And this, everybody thinks it works a different way, is what creates a lot of the uncertainty, I think. If we just had accepted, unfortunately.
At the moment, that's exactly how it works. Nobody knows how it's supposed to work. It's never really been established.
And my big fear is that video game companies will end up claiming they own all footage derived from the games that they made. Like, that's my fear, is that they'll establish
eventually
that.
One will.
That's what they want.
Almost did.
They almost... No, it's a bit harder because YouTube can't content ID just random gameplay footage. They can content ID cutscenes, but just random gameplay, you can't. But there's always that worry that some game company would use this as a means of controlling criticism. And I'd hate to see that.
Well, in that respect, don't think that would stand up in court for a wide variety of reasons. Plus,
I agree that it shouldn't.
Like, hey, you can have VCRs, so why can't you also do
logically,
this?
Logically, Josh, you're right, but the people who are in charge of doing internet shit these days are fucking ass-backward idiots. So I don't know if anything will be reasonable when it comes to the internet. Like, I'm pretty fucking scared about it.
We need to get the ghost of Mr. Rogers to come and help us out.
There have been a lot of court cases that have gone really weird, and just, you know, you could blame it on bad lawyers, you can blame it on stupid juries, you can blame it on dumb laws, I don't care. The point is, you can't count on, you can't just say, well, there'll be a court case and I'm sure justice will be done and it'll be okay. There is precedent for things going completely sideways and being really, really bad.
I have zero fucking faith in the government. I don't think that they... I mean, maybe they'll turn around and this net neutrality thing will be fine and
case
whatever.
In point.
But, like, I don't think that they understand the internet, and I don't think that they want to give freedom over getting whatever money they get for doing net neutrality. And that's kind of the way that it's been going lately. Where it's like, well, I'm a congressman, I could be making money and throwing it at strippers, or I could help the American people. Well, I guess I'll take the money.
It's not, like, it's not even American people. It's not even the American people. It's like humanity. It's like, this is an important concept for everybody that uses the internet, which is almost all of us. And for the future, you know, this is an incredibly important concept, is that we don't have this dystopian future where companies are committing cyber warfare and attacking each other's traffic. It should be that part of the deal is when you plug in, you agree to carry everything through your pipe, and everybody else agrees to carry your stuff through theirs, and nobody's going to mess with each other's traffic. That's the only way it can. Yep. That's how it was designed to work. And you're absolutely right. There's no money in freedom. There's no money in just in not regulating things.
Yeah.
Or in, well, it depends on which, what you mean by regulation. There's no money in not letting people control it. Makes me sad.
And grumpy.
Well, I got pretty heavy.
No, I'm all depressed.
And grumpy.
Seamus, we have mailbag questions. People like to email us questions. If you'd like to email us a question,
sad.
You can send it to diecast@seamusyoung.com, I think is the address. I should probably not go into the Diecast hosting without knowing the address to the goddamn email.
Yeah. No, you're right. Diecast@SeamusYoung.com. Let's do one question, because I really wanted to do this question. Dear Diecast, what genres of music do you guys enjoy, and how well do you think they've been implemented in games?
Ooh. Do you want
and
me to go
this
first?
This is from Protozoa34.
What's up, Protozoa34?
I think that's a very low number for a protozoa. If you're protozoa number 34, you are a really, really old protozoa. So props to you. Yeah, go for it, Mumbles.
So I like all kinds of music. I grew up listening to punk rock mostly, Riot Girl shit. I was in a Riot Girl band for a little while in high school.
Oh, and then, no way! That is so perfect.
Yes, I was. I played lead guitar.
That fits my mental. Oh,
yeah.
I didn't even know you played. This fits my mental image of you so well. Like, if I was going to make Mumbles fan fiction, which I totally haven't done ever, like, you would fight crime, and then your alternate ego would be a Riot Girl punk rock band.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was just a bunch of, it was me and two other girls, and we were just punk rock
because
girls.
Of course.
So, yeah,
were
exactly.
They on the super team, too? Did you, like, fight crime together?
Right.
Oh, wait, we're
right,
not
we
supposed to talk about
together.
That. Never mind. You weren't superheroes. I made that up. Go ahead.
So that's how I kind of started out with music, and then, you know, I ran a music blog for a little while until I didn't have time for it, because I'm currently creative writing and trying to make a comic book, so I don't really have time for it. I don't want to talk about the comic book, but I'm making a comic book. That's as far as I want to go, but, now I listen to pretty much everything there is. I like electronic stuff a lot now. That's kind of my jam right now. But as far as music in games, I think that the Supergiant Studios do it the best because they make their own music. And there's so much love put into the music. Like, it matches each, like, level. It matches the tone of the game. It tells a story.
What's some of the games?
They write.
What's some of the games that they make?
That's Transistor and Bastion. Those guys.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So, the Bastion soundtrack, for example, is what blew everyone's mind. And I actually have. I should fucking be on their PR team, because I sold Bastion games based off of... I did! I sold Bastion games based off of the soundtrack. I was like... I wrote this huge article about the soundtrack on my blog, and I got people were like, I don't play games, but I'm gonna go play this game. And it's just because the music is so cool. And the Bastion soundtrack was really, like, twangy and dusty feeling and rambling, and it matched how the game felt. And then they made Transistor, which is almost like a cyberpunk Bioshock kind of game. That's how I would imagine it, I guess. And so it's more electronic. It's got kind of this smoky lounge feel sometimes, and I could sell a fucking game off that too. So it's, I think that the love that they put into the music is amazing. And they're one of the only studios really doing that, I think.
Yeah, I kind of regret not buying the Transistor soundtrack when I was buying the game. Because, like, I do that occasionally, and then I never end up listening to the soundtrack of the games that I buy. But Transistor soundtrack is so good.
I listen to it all the time. Like, I probably listen to the Transistor soundtrack more than I listen to the Bastion soundtrack. Because it's just better background noise, I think.
I've bought games because I wanted to use them as listening music. And I really appreciate when they just include the soundtrack with the game, like, just as a pile of MP3 files, and I just throw it in my player. I've kind of talked about my taste in music, which is really narrow. Like, really, like, the only thing I listen to is basically electronic music.
Hair metal!
Oh, no! That is my kryptonite.
Ew.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my god, you too? Yay! Yeah. Fuck, I hate that stuff.
Yeah, but I love electronic, especially just all instrumental electronic music. I've heard the Transistor soundtrack. They put it up on YouTube. Of course, that's not a convenient way to listen to it, and I'd rather buy it and just, you know, have it rather than listen to it on YouTube. But I've heard it on YouTube. It's fantastic. That's exactly what I need. Is I need music when I'm writing and when I'm programming. And I don't want words. I can't handle vocals. I start listening to the words. And I really, really dig electronic music. So, like, I get into Descent soundtrack. But, like, my favorite music is all game soundtracks. Descent, System Shock 2, Retrograde I'm digging pretty much. Hotline Miami was really good. Transistor is really good. I'm going to get that soundtrack eventually. I like a little bit of chiptune, but a little bit of chiptune goes a long way. Like, I can't, like, listen to hours of chiptune.
Me either.
Chiptune's like eating candy. Like, you can have a few pieces of candy every once in a while. You put some chiptune in a long playlist. But, like, to sit there and listen to an hour of chiptune, I think, would be hard. It would be like eating candy three times a day. But in that spirit, I like the Bit Trip games. I like their music, but I don't think they have soundtracks, or at least I haven't found a soundtrack for the game. Okay, I haven't looked. I didn't see it on Steam when I was getting the game. But the in-game music is really, really super catchy. So that's the stuff I like. And that's basically all I like, because I'm super shallow.
What about you, Campster? What kind of music do you hate?
I don't hate any music, but I also don't really like any music. Music and me don't get along.
Weird.
It's not that I don't like music. It's that it is an artistic medium I am utterly ignorant of. And, like, I see the way I see music the way I think my mom sees video games or movies. Like, she's aware some exist and that some are good and some are bad, but she doesn't know why. And that's sort of how I feel about music. So my entire interest in music is more like stuff I run into consuming other media that I then absorb into my life, which is why my iTunes playlist is like random music I grew up with that my parents played when I was a kid, lots of video game soundtracks, lots of movie soundtracks. Lately, whenever like Todd in the Shadows covers a song, I end up downloading it because it gets stuck in my head and I end up doing that. So, like, just, I absorb music. I don't really have a genre, per se. I have eclectic random crap from every genre. I'll put it this way. I was out at a bar a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, I know this song. Oh, what is this song? Oh, this is the song from Borderlands. That's what this is. This is the Borderlands song. And no, it was the original version of I think, I can't remember what it was, but it was the original, like, the jazz or the blues version of that song, and I was basically told that I'm an idiot for knowing that the crappy version of the song from a video game is my knowledge of music, and that's sort of where I am with music, so I don't know if I'm the best person to turn to on this. Josh?
Well, I'm kind of in the same boat in that I don't, like, follow music that closely. Like, I really like jazz as a genre. I don't think I could name a single jazz artist. I just, like, go and find jazz and throw it on a playlist.
You know what soundtrack was overlooked largely to the sands of time? SimCity 3000. That was a fantastic jazzy soundtrack.
I dig the SimCity 2000 shitty MIDI soundtrack.
I used to dig MIDI too back in the day. Like, I listened to the Descent soundtrack, and that was all MIDI, and I dug it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Fucking Gone Home did music really well. They took actual Riot Girl bands, put them on cassettes in the game.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You take the cassette out, you put it in a player, and then you listen to it while you're exploring the room. That was fucking smart. That was really smart.
I was a little confused there, because I was like, wait. Gone Home didn't have, like, music. It didn't have a proper, like tone-setting music that it did while you were exploring the house. And I was like, oh, yeah, there was that Riot Girl stuff in it.
That was smart as fuck. I haven't seen a game. Well, I guess, like, Fallout. But, yeah. There's not a lot of games where you physically take a cassette tape and you put it in the cassette player, and then it plays while you're in the room. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of special.
Yeah. Fallout's problem was that they didn't have enough tracks. You had this
I always download
15
mods.
15 yeah, tracks, and yeah.
Like, after a couple hours, because I love listening to the Fallout music, because it's so fucking smart to have old-timey music playing while you're just destroying dudes with energy weapons and shit. But after a couple hours, it gets old, because it's the same 15 songs, like you said. So I always download mods that's, like, all, like, hundreds of fucking old-timey songs. And I'm like, yeah, this is my jam. This is my jam.
Is it... I want to say it's Swing, but I get the feeling that's not totally correct.
It's a mix. So Fallout takes place in the 50s, but they use music that dates back to even, like, the 30s. So you have jazz, you have blues, you have the beginnings of country music, you have swing, you have big band. If you ever wanted to study, like, old music, Fallout's a good place to start.
Is any of that stuff from New Vegas loungy? I would have figured there'd be lounge music from New Vegas.
There is... But a lot of it is cowboy
stuff. Yeah, the 50s in Vegas was also, like, big, like, Sinatra.
Right.
Period. So you had a lot of that.
Like the Rat Pack stuff. The thing that I'm going to try not to get too geeky about this, but the thing that I thought was interesting is, so in New Vegas you have the obvious Rat Pack stuff. Like, you have... Is his name Vinny? His name's Vinny, right? The main guy that that kills you in the beginning of the game.
Benny,
yeah.
Benny is obviously emulating the Rat Pack. Like, down to the T. And there's even a whole casino that looks like it's based off the Rat Pack. But the interesting thing is, if you go off the strip, there's the guys who are dressing up like Elvis. And the Rat Pack was before Elvis. And in fact, Elvis was the one who basically killed off Sinatra. Like, Elvis was the one who took his place. And so it's kind of interesting to me that in the slums, you have these young guys pretending to be Elvis, and then on the strip, you have more, like, older, mookish guys being the Rat Pack. I thought that was kind of interesting.
I never noticed that. That's kind of cool.
Music nerd!
Next season of Spoiler Warning, all the stuff we missed last time we played Fallout New Vegas.
Right. Oh my god. There's so many people playing New Vegas now. Like, I'll go on the internet, on different... anything from 4chan to Reddit, and people are, like, rediscovering New Vegas, and it always puts a smile on my face, because that's, like, one of the best games I've ever played.
I think that about wraps it up. More thoughts?
I'm hungry.
And with that profound statement, we finish the diecast.